Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
Support for Car Talk on NPR comes from NPR member stations and
The Pajamagram Company, offering leopard hoodie footies and women's pajamas delivered overnight and on Valentine's Day at pajamagram.com. And
The Charles Hotel in Harvard Square,
featuring the Corbu Spa and Salon with farm-to-spa table treatments and 30-minute enhancements
at corbuspa.com. And
Esurance, offering online tools and 24/7 service. Insurance for the modern world. More at esurance.com. Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio. With us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the Distracted Driving Department here at Car Talk Plaza.
Oh, you are going to love this.
I know.
We got this interesting letter from someone named Cheryl Cohen. Dear Tom and Ray, I've seen a lot of distracted drivers in my day. I thought that I had already seen the worst when I was rear-ended by someone drinking coffee with one hand and talking on a cell phone with the other. But no, this one tops it. I was stopped at a light. I dared to glance in my rearview mirror. A woman in a minivan behind me was vigorously brushing her teeth. When the light changed, she opened her window and spat. and when I spotted her again, we were in motion and she was still brushing, rolling down her window and spitting. The next time I looked, she was gargling. Finally, after spitting out the mouthwash, she began, you ready for this? To eat her breakfast. You know where this is going, right?
Yeah, I do know. I mean, why do they allow this stuff?
No. Cheryl wants to know, why did she brush before she ate her breakfast? Instead of waiting until after she
Oh, here I thought we were going to get involved in this whole thing about distracted driving and how we should incarcerate these people and take their licenses away. And
no.
Cheryl's worried. Yeah. Why would you brush before you ate your breakfast?
I have no idea.
Huh. Well,
wow.
We have to answer. Good question, Cheryl. We'll get back to you.
Wow.
In the meanwhile, if you have a question about your car, your own car, give us a call. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Michael from Minneapolis. I have a 1999 Toyota RAV4 5-speed, and in the really cold weather, I get this annoying whine from the front right wheel area.
Annoying whine.
Yeah.
You sure my brother's not riding shotgun? So the whining is, can you change it at all? Just stepping on the brake change it, for example?
Nothing changes it at all. It just stays at this kind of an annoying whistle. When I start off first, and it has to be in really, really cold weather, because if it's above freezing, it doesn't happen. And when I roll off first, you can't hear it. But once I get above walking speed, and if I continue at 25 miles an hour, I get that whine all the time.
Where are you from?
I'm from Ireland originally.
Oh, the weather wasn't miserable enough in Ireland. You had to move to Minneapolis.
To Minneapolis just to see how bad it could get.
Just checking, you know. Well, anyway.
Okay, so it's 30 degrees, and no matter what speed you go at, you hear the same.
No, it's not that. Is it more of a chirp? Is it a whistle high? Give us. Try to make the noise.
Oh.
Something like that.
It's more like a whistle.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like you might have a stuck brake caliper.
And it'll only happen up to about 20, 30 miles an hour. Then once I get up to highway speed, after I do highway speed, it disappears altogether.
Yeah, no, if you had a stuck caliper, then that's exactly what might happen. And of course, driving on the highway, you're probably not using the brakes very much. So if
right.
the caliper was stuck causing this noise because the pads are just slightly squeezing that disc and making that noise, after you've driven it a while, a little bit of the pad material perhaps is worn away, and the noise goes away, and maybe if you've exercised the brakes a few times.
I don't like
How come it disappears, though, once the car gets warmed up?
Well, once the car is warmed up, you probably had a chance to use the brakes a few times and exercise that caliper, and maybe it frees up.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not thrilled about it either,
no,
but I
don't like it.
If I didn't give you some kind of an answer, we might never get rid of you, Michael.
Why does it happen?
They go on and on. They say, well, I don't like that. And then my brother has to chime in and say, he doesn't like the answer. Everyone's against me.
Everyone knows when it gets colder,
things shrink. Yes.
What is it that's shrinking?
Yes.
That's making a noise. You have no idea, do you?
No, not really, no.
Because you would say the noise comes when it gets warmer. Because when it's warmer, things expand, and that's when the noise should happen.
Well, here's the other possibility.
He's got an upside-down situation.
Here's the other possibility, that the noise isn't coming from the brakes at all, or even from the wheel.
There you go.
But you say you have to be moving. You can't just sit there with the engine running and hear
the
noise.
Correct.
And it only once I get past walking speed, then it kicks in.
Yeah, yeah.
This had to be the first call of the day, Louis. This is it, huh? Well, here's what I would try to do. I would try to duplicate the noise by having either leaving it at the shop overnight and having them drive it. But better than that, they could leave it outside and just jack up that one wheel and spin it. And I think they'll immediately figure out that the caliper is sticking. I'm sticking with that.
You are.
No pun intended.
Even though there's no scientific... you can't even come up with a theory.
Not yet. Not on the spot like this. I'm hard-pressed to come up with this. But, and I don't, you know, who knows what happens when the temperature goes below 30 degrees.
That's true.
I don't know what things are shrinking, what things are sticking. And I'm not about to say that something has to shrink in order for this to happen, or something has to expand for it to stop happening. But I think the fact that the thing...
So how do you explain the temperature thing?
Well, I was hoping that Michael would
just pass right by it.
Yeah, well, it's not a wheel bearing.
No, it isn't.
This is obviously a four-wheel drive vehicle, right?
It's two-wheel drive.
Oh, that makes it even simpler. Well, it's front-wheel drive, so you don't have locking hubs or any of that stuff, so it isn't any of that. I mean, it's unlikely it's a wheel bearing because it would get worse as it warmed up. It would not make this noise. It's got to be in the brakes. I don't know exactly what it is, but I'm willing to bet it's a sticking pad or a sticking caliper.
Well, we will be sure to call him back.
Oh, no.
2 weeks from now when he's had a chance to take it to his shop.
Okay, fair enough. I'll pull the caliper off and take a look at it on the weekend.
Pull the caliper off and put some disc brake quiet. There's a little disc grease you can get that goes on the backside of the pads.
Right.
And make sure the slides are working freely. And if that's the case, you're good to go.
All right. Fair enough.
See you later.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm exhausted already. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Adrian in Pahoa, Hawaii.
What's the name of your town in Hawaii?
It is Pahoa.
Pahoa.
P-A-H-O-A.
What island are you on?
I am on the Big Island, south of Hilo, the rainy area.
Yeah, the rainy season, perennial rainy season.
And what kind of problem could you possibly have that you would care about?
Well, I actually have a 1991 Chevy S10 pickup truck. I have a question about gas mileage.
Okay.
The mileage looks pretty good for about the first half a tank. But then, once you get to about half a tank, the gas gauge starts going down pretty quickly. So I talked to a friend of mine about this, and he says that the actual gas mileage of the truck changes depending on how much gas is in the tank.
Really?
Right?
Really?
I think that's kind of bogus. I think that it's something to do with the gas gauge itself. And so I wanted to find out.
Theoretically, he is correct, because as you get down to half a tank, the vehicle is that much lighter.
Yes.
Also, the mileage should go up.
That's
what I would think, yeah.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
But that's baloney, because there's so little difference that who would ever notice it?
Yeah.
So
we have to go back to the main likelihood.
Yeah, your friend is crazy.
No, well, we know that, but is there any way that you might have a teenage son who's siphoning gas out? So you could never siphon gas out of a full tank, because then it would be noticed. If you filled the tank up and you go to the next morning and it was down to a three quarters, you'd say, hey, wait a minute, I drove 4 miles and used a quarter of a tank of gas. Someone took gas from me.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if it was at, you know, 5/8 and somebody took a few gallons, you wouldn't notice it.
Yeah.
Do you have a teenager in the family?
No, and, you know, we live pretty far away from just about everybody else, so unless the goats are doing it, I think...
those goats can be awfully mischievous.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's more likely that you just have a gas gauge that's wacko.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and that happens all the time.
Okay.
Yeah, so what you really need to determine is what your actual mileage is by, you know how you do that, you fill the tank, you drive it, you fill it again, you do the math, and you figure out...
Yeah, I think it's about 16 on a bad day, and 18 if the bed is empty and I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah,
that's wonderful. But disregard the gauge, because those gauges are notoriously inaccurate. I mean, we're lucky that they work when they say E.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean... When it says you're on half, you're clearly not at half. There's a reserve built into the thing, you know. So you can't rely on that. When it says it's full, it's usually pretty accurate, and when it says it's on E, it's usually pretty accurate. But everything else in the middle is something you should question.
Well, the interesting thing about gas gauges is they're so mysterious, because you really can't see anything, and they could be as inaccurate as can be, and everybody wants to know what is really happening in there. And
Well, that's why if you light a match and look, you'll
find out, and you won't be asking that anymore.
but don't worry about it. As long as no one's stealing your gas, that was my biggest concern. And your friend is nuts, so you got two questions answered, which is a lot better than the previous caller. See ya, Adrian.
All right, thanks very much.
Stay dry.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK, that's 888.
These questions are getting too hard.
227-8255, hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Jane calling from Fairfax, Virginia.
Hi, Jane.
Jane.
From Fairfax.
Yes, and it's Jane with a Y.
Really?
Jane with a J-A-Y-N-E.
What's the difference, and how do you rate a Y? I want to know is something about your heritage that throws the Y in there?
Well, yes, actually, my grandmother, who I'm named after, her name was Jane without a Y, so my parents wanted to give me a Y just so that it would be a little different.
Why? Why a Y? So just to be different.
Just to be a little different.
Just to be a little different.
Well, it certainly is a kind of a fancy little...
So it isn't like if your heritage is Scottish, you'd have a Y in your Jane.
I don't know about that. The grandmother that I'm named after is Italian.
Oh,
a lot of Janes in Italy.
Jane is not an Italian name, so yeah. I just don't know.
Well, we're happy to meet you anyway,
Janina.
Jane with a Y. And, what can we do for you?
Well, I have a 2001 Subaru Outback, and I need you to tell me who's right, my husband or my father.
Oh boy.
And on top of that, the question involves the safety of our 10-month-old baby.
Ah, okay. What's the deal?
The baby will only nap in the car, which means that I spend a lot of time driving around in the car.
Uh-huh.
And if I am driving around and he falls asleep and I come home, I can't take him out of the car because he'll wake up. So my husband says, fine, just park on the street, leave the car running, either with the AC on or the heat on, and just stay in the car. My father says that that's dangerous, that we could have carbon monoxide poisoning. So who is right?
They're both crazy.
Well, no. I mean, I don't like either one.
Mm.
Staying in the car with the engine running and the kids sleeping is probably not as dangerous as it might think, especially if there are no leaks. The biggest danger from carbon monoxide is there's a leak someplace,
mm-hmm.
either from an intake an exhaust manifold under the hood, and carbon monoxide enters through the fresh air system.
And your car is old enough to have leaks like this.
It could be.
And the only reason you're doing that is because it's cold out and you want to keep the heater on. Is that it?
Right, or it's hot out and we need the air conditioning.
Yeah, have you noticed that the kid is sleeping really well when he's in the car?
He does nap a bit longer when we're in the car.
Yeah, and of course, so that there's that danger that carbon monoxide infiltration will take place, and you can buy a detector which will tell you if that's happening.
I could buy the same kind of detector that I would get for
your house.
House.
Yeah, they're battery operated, you know, they stick up on a wall, and you can put it on the dashboard, and that would probably do it, although... I don't like the idea of sitting in your car wasting
like
gasoline. And how old? This kid's 10 months old?
He's 10 months old.
10 months old.
Yeah.
I don't think we're qualified to answer
So whose
this
position
question.
Was this about your husband was worried about leaving the kid in the car? No, your father.
No.
his father.
My father is worried about that. My husband actually frequently takes naps in his own car.
With the engine running?
With the engine running.
And what kind of a car does he have?
He has a 2001 Honda Civic.
Does he slur his words and bump into things a lot?
Does he drool a lot?
I don't think that's related, though.
I think the safe thing to do is get a detector, but I think, you know...
I don't like it.
Yeah.
But where is your husband that he can't get out of the car and go someplace and nap?
At work.
Well,
at work.
Yeah, exactly. He's a soccer coach, and so he's always driving to different fields, and that's the only chance for him to nap since, you know, with our kids, neither one of us get a lot of sleep.
Well, I mean... You really don't need to leave the car running. Even if it's very cold or very warm, if you keep the windows closed, you'd be surprised how warm you can be in a car if it's very cold out. If you're wearing your jacket and your hat and whatever and you conk out, if the engine isn't running, I feel odd about suggesting to people that they leave the engine running and they fall asleep.
I don't like it.
And the kid will grow out of this.
Yes, he will, because we have an older son, and we did the same thing. And luckily, he grew out of it in about a year and a half. So,
yeah.
Okay, but meanwhile, we'll turn the car off.
Yeah.
My father will be very happy to hear this.
Well, you can buy a Prius, you know. Prius, the thing shuts off.
That's true.
Yeah, and it'll start up automatically and run the heat, and then, you know, when it has to, it'll do that. But otherwise, the engine will stay off, and it has quite a bit of capacity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know how long it'll run the AC with the engine staying off. Probably not very long, because that'll run the battery down quite a bit. The AC runs off an electric motor now in the Prius. So, I don't know. You could try that, but
a good idea, too.
But pretty soon, this kid's going to be 18 months, and you'll be able to get him out of the car. The husband, he might be a lost cause. Good luck, Jane.
Thank you so much.
See you later.
Good luck.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, Tommy, let's see if you can pull last week's puzzler out of your hat.
What if I can't remember where I put my hat?
That would be a bad start. But I will tell you, it's a puzzler about the military, and I'll have the answer in just a minute, so stay tuned.
Wow.
You know you wrecked the major part the day you left and broke my heart, and I can't get it started anymore. And then you took away the key, the love that you were giving me. Now I can't seem to open any door. I'm living in a junkyard now. I don't take it too hard now. Surrounded by the things that used to be. I'm just another relic here. Rust a little more each year. You return the parts that you took.
Support for Car Talk on NPR comes from our new Amish vehicle service, featuring axle greasing, buckboard shining, and complimentary oat bag refills from NPR, NPR member stations, and
Reputation.com, with tools to monitor and protect the online reputations of doctors, lawyers, and business professionals. Learn more at Reputation.com. And
the Skoll Foundation,
supporting social entrepreneurs and their innovations to solve the world's most pressing problems.
At SKOLL.org.
And WeatherTech, maker of custom-fit floor mats and floor liners made in the USA. Learn more at WeatherTech.com or 1-800-CAR-MATS.
And even though NPR CEO lists us both on PetFinder.com whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.
Support for Car Talk comes from Nashville Public Radio listener members, from Patty Carter, Sue Chilton, Eve Stewart, and Stephen Carr of Zeitlin & Company Realtors, professionalism in real estate service. Information is at ZeitlinRealtors.com. And the Bridgestone America's Trust Fund, supporting the many volunteer efforts of their teammates with gifts to community organizations that make Middle Tennessee a great place to call home.
Thank you. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler.
I don't remember. I can't remember it.
I could barely remember it myself, but it was good. Picture this. It's 1936. You're in your second year of high school. Europe is on the brink of yet another war.
Senior year in high school.
In a secret location in Germany, German officers are gathered around a table with the designers and builders of its new personnel carrier. They're going over every little detail and leaving no stone unturned. They want everything to be flawless. One of the officers stands up and says, I have a question about the fan belt, about the longevity of the fan belt. You with me?
They spoke English there?
Yeah.
Just like in all the movies?
I'm reading the subtitles.
Just like in all the movies. I often wondered, how come they all spoke English?
Well, it's so close to German, after all.
Yeah, you just add an ish or an to the end of everything.
Anyway, this fan belt looks just like the belt around your waist. It's a flat piece of rubber, and it's designed to run around the fan and the generator. So he asks, how long do you expect the belt to last? The engineer says, 30 to 40,000 kilometers. The officer says, not good enough.
He said, how many miles is that?
The colonel says...
That's why I never made any money in script writing.
Yeah. The colonel says, not good enough. We need it to last at least 60K. The engineer says, not a problem. It's just a question of taking off the belt and flipping it over, right? Turning it inside out.
Yeah.
The officer says, that's unacceptable. Our soldiers will be engaged in battle. We can't ask them to change fan belts in the middle of the battlefield.
Well, it's a good point.
That's right.
I mean, come on. You can't tell the guys to stop shooting. Your fan belt's got to be replaced.
Exactly. Like, hold your fire. So the engineers huddle together and they come up with a clever design change. And I think I mentioned they do not change the material of the belt in any way, yet they satisfy the new longevity requirement quite easily. What did they do? And what they did was they manufactured the belt with a twist in it. Imagine if you took your own belt and joined the two ends together. So you'd have an inside of the belt and an outside. But imagine before joining them, if you gave one end a twist and made it into what's called a Mobius strip.
Of course. Now it's going to go on both sides all the time.
Exactly. And in essence, you've doubled the length of the belt.
Oh,
you've allowed it to run on the inside and the outside at the same time.
Does Detroit know about this?
Yes.
They do? We don't have any Mobius strip fan belts on American cars?
Well, it's a little known fact that the fan belt lobby is very strong in this country.
They don't want them to last twice as long.
Of course not. Nor do we who replace belts.
Yes, I know.
Anyway, who's our winner, Tommy?
The winner is Timothy Reed from Juneau, Alaska. And for having his answer selected at random from the pile of correct answers that we got, Timothy's going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at cartalk.com. With which, he can get a copy of our 4-CD collection, Field Guide to the North American Wacko.
You know, we've realized that over time, we have assembled perhaps the world's most definitive collection of tape recordings of the prized North American Wacko. And we thought it was time to publish our results.
Right. And this set includes the specimen we call Adrian. Adrian decided to surprise her husband on his birthday by bringing him 600 pounds of rocks in his Saab.
So he got 600 pounds of rocks and a bill for a new suspension system. Good work, Adrian.
Anyway, this 4-CD collection, Field Guide to the North American Wacko, is yours, Timothy, for being this week's puzzler winner.
And if your name is not Timothy Reed and you didn't win this week, stay tuned because we have a new puzzler that's coming up in the third half of the show. But in the meantime, we'll take your car questions, as always, at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Doris. I'm calling from Philadelphia.
Hi, Doris.
Hi.
Have we spoken before?
Never in my lifetime.
Okay.
But it's
Doris,
a genuine pleasure to be talking to you now.
It's a pleasure to talk to you too, Doris.
Well, thank you so much. I have a puzzle for you.
All right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. A couple weeks ago, driving the car, as a red light comes on my dash, check gauges, but to my horror, I look to the left and I see my temperature has gone through the roof up to the top to 220 degrees. So I quickly ran the car back to the mechanic, hoping I wouldn't, you know, disintegrate before I reached him. And he couldn't take me at the time. He was busy. He said, come back tomorrow.
Come back tomorrow?
Tomorrow?
It's like going into the emergency room with blood coming out of every vein, and the doctor says, I'm busy now, come back tomorrow.
Exactly.
Well, you can write him off.
So anyway, I couldn't drive the car for the next few days. When I got back in the car, to my utter amazement, temperature was normal.
What do you mean when you got back in the car? After seeing the guy?
No.
After a two-day respite, you then drove it and it didn't overheat.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Great.
So I called him on the telephone and explained what was going on.
Why did you bother? He didn't care about you.
He should have been calling you on the phone.
He should have been calling you. Doris, did you make it home?
I wanted an answer to what was going on with my car.
This is a Chrysler Corporation car, is it not?
This is a Pontiac Sunbird.
Pontiac Sunbird.
Pontiac Sunbird?
From 1988. And I love my car.
All right.
Anyway, I called him, and he gave me this educated guess. Oh, he said, your thermostat got stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, quote, are you saying that it unstuck itself?
Uh-huh.
He says, oh, it happens all the time.
Uh-huh.
That's my question to you. Is this a common occurrence?
Happens all the time, Doris.
That's what he said.
We see it every day. There's hardly a day that goes by that we don't see an unstuck thermostat.
Well, the truth is that he was right.
Yeah.
It does happen.
Yeah.
Frequently.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, not every minute.
Of all the ways that a thermostat can fail, this is one of the more common ones. It can stick one day and then work perfectly okay the next day. But once it sticks, it's destined to imminent failure.
Oh.
And you should have it replaced.
I just had this thermostat put in a couple months ago. This is a new thermostat.
Well, it's no good anymore.
Well, maybe. What kind of driving were you doing the day that it overheated as opposed to the day that it worked normally? And I suspect you've been driving it ever since?
Yes, ever since, and it's been doing fine. I was just taking a short run. I didn't go on a long trip.
Mm-hmm.
It was like 10 minutes away from home when the red light came on.
And the red light came on.
He could have put a faulty one in, and I would just ask him to replace it and also to check out the whole cooling system and to make sure that your fan works every time. You know, there's an electric fan that is thermostatically controlled. And
right.
If that doesn't come on every single time the engine reaches a certain temperature, then it will, in fact, overheat. So he should check that, too.
So three things. Check the thermostat, the fan, and the cooling system.
Right, just to see if there are any leaks. Now, I mean, the reason I asked the question earlier was to determine if you had, for example, driven it on the highway that day and then come into the city. But you did the same. You do the same kind of driving all the time.
Neighborhood driving.
Day that it overheated, you hadn't done anything out of the ordinary.
Exactly. That's true.
Okay. Well, my vote goes with the thermostat.
Yeah, the guy was right.
Yeah.
Take it in, Doris, and have a new thermostat put in.
I would do that.
Oh, okay.
See you later.
Thank you so much for your advice.
You're very welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Brings up an interesting question. Even though he was right, should she ever go back to him again? When he sent her away in her hour of need.
No, she should abandon him. Drop him like a hot potato.
I would drop him like a hot potato. Because maybe he's competent, but he has no
empathy,
compassion,
no compassion, no feeling.
No fear. He didn't care.
No boat,
come back
no
tomorrow.
Boat payment, too.
No, come back tomorrow. By tomorrow, she could have fried the engine. And then where would we all be? If she had said, I drove home like he said, come back tomorrow. I went back the next day. The thing was hot as heck. And my engine fried. Should I sue him? And we would have said, you bet. You call Dewey, Cheatham & Howe.
And one of those sleazeballs will sue him.
We'll represent you.
If you'd like to call us, our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name's Jim.
Hi, Jim. How are you doing?
Well, I'm fine. How about yourself?
Jim, where are you calling from, Jim?
I'm calling from Millwood, Virginia.
Millwood.
Sounds like a mill town.
It was once. We have a mill.
Yeah.
We have a mill.
Hence
the
name.
It's not a mill anymore, but
Wood
Mill,
Virginia.
Yeah.
So what's up?
I have a Ford Explorer. It's got about 50,000 miles on it.
15?
50.
50.
Yeah, 50,000 miles. And it's got an intermittent problem. What'll happen is you'll be driving along on a perfectly flat space of road, and it'll start to knock. And if you're going up a hill, the knock can be incapacitating. It can sound like gunshots. Well, not gunshots, but it's really loud inside the engine, and you lose power, and all I've been able to do in those cases is pull over and turn the car off.
Mm.
And generally when I turn it back on again, it's doing okay.
Really?
And, yeah.
And the knocking that you hear on a level road is worsened when you try to accelerate on that flat road?
Yes, it is.
If you rev it up, does the knocking get faster?
Yeah, sure.
If I put in the clutch and rev it up,
yeah,
there's no knocking. But if I let the clutch back out again, the knocking is still
What? You put in the clutch and you rev it up, the knocking goes away?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, sure, because he's taking the load off the engine.
Yeah.
Oh, but that... But
you confused my brother for a minute there.
I had a theory, though.
I know.
Look,
you don't hear me bellyache like that when my theories get shot down.
Well, I mean, it sounded so much like a stuck valve to me.
Hey, but wait, I've got more.
Yeah, well, good.
I've got more. Maybe, maybe.
Well, forget what
like
I said about
like
the stuck
like
valve. Then.
My dear sweetheart parked it on an incline. Facing uphill and left it in first gear, as you guys told us to do on Car Talk.
Yeah.
And without the brake on, and she got out.
We never told you to do it without the brake on. You gotta put the brake on.
That's all right. Just continue.
So anyway, so she got out of the car, and the car drifted backwards. It went clunk and went backwards, and then it went clunk and went backwards again.
Yeah.
This is great. Now tell me, how steep an incline was it?
Oh, that's fairly steep.
Irrelevant.
No.
It's irrelevant.
It's not irrelevant.
It is irrelevant. And
it's not irrelevant. Jim says it's not irrelevant.
What the hell does he know? He's calling us. Now, if it were relevant, the only way that it could be relevant is if when the car slid backwards and made the engine turn backwards, that it somehow jumped timing.
No.
And in doing so, perhaps bent the valve.
No.
But it didn't jump timing, and it didn't bend the valve.
I agree with that.
Because most of the time, it runs okay.
The problem existed before it drifted backwards anyway.
This had nothing to do with it, so you can't blame this on her.
No, I would never blame
it. You were trying to.
Of course he wasn't going to blame it on her.
Never.
He was just giving us data, man.
The first thing that came to my mind is that, in fact, I was persuaded by your use of the word knock.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really knocking.
Yeah.
But I've come to believe that it isn't knocking, that you have, in fact, a sticky valve.
Flabbergasted.
Wait, so what you're saying is that
I'm flabbergasted.
This valve sticking then makes noise.
Oh yeah.
A sticky valve makes a lot of noise.
What happens when the valve sticks in the open position?
Yeah.
The cam is turning, and the cam is supposed to open the valve.
Yeah.
Okay. When the valve is already open, all the valve train mechanism in between the cam and the valve has too much lash in it. So when the cam comes around to open it, it has to move all that stuff and it slams against the valve stem.
Yeah, yeah.
And you hear tuck, 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 and then it can go away as quickly as it appeared. The valve can free up and in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
The noise can be gone and the thing running smoothly. And incidentally, you would notice a loss of power because you'd be knocking out one of your six cylinders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you'd be running on 5/6 power.
But since you have now come around to my way of thinking, doesn't the fact that he steps on the clutch and revs up the engine and the noise goes away make you want to say, what?
No, not really.
Well, get out of that, wise guy.
No, it may not be a stuck valve. It may be a collapsed lifter. It may be a collapsed lifter.
Stuck valve. No, but if it's a collapsed lifter,
then revving it up like that increases the oil pressure, pumps the lifter up, and the noise goes away.
Well, I can understand that, but now how do you explain that the thing rolled backwards when in first gear on just a reasonable kind of incline if there wasn't a couple of valves stuck open when they should have been closed?
Yeah.
How do you explain that?
Yeah. How do you explain that?
Anyway, Jim, stick with me on this. See, all this doesn't, it really doesn't fit together. A lifter is a great answer for revving up the engine. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
It also explains the noise, but it doesn't explain rolling backwards. We can assume that the rolling backwards has nothing to do with it, but you must admit,
right,
that a vehicle with only 50,000 miles on...
I will now integrate everything.
Let me just say, a vehicle with 50,000 miles on it should have plenty of compression to hold the vehicle if it's in first gear.
I agree.
That should never have happened.
Right, I have a new theory. You have a stuck valve. And you may have had a stuck...
And a collapsed lifter.
No, you may have had a couple of stuck valves at one time. Maybe when your girlfriend parked on this hill.
Yeah.
This famous hill.
Yeah.
The valves were stuck in the open position, so you had a four-cylinder engine instead of a six-cylinder engine.
Yeah. And bingo, you rolled.
And hence the vehicle rolled downhill. So we can accept that. Now,
sure.
When you rev it up on occasion, you are hitting that stuck valve with enough additional force to unstick it.
The pistons, the connecting rod stretch theory.
No.
That doesn't work.
Yeah. The other day, my brother discussed the connecting rod stretch theory.
Well,
when you rev
up
the engine.
I'm still refining it.
but that doesn't work. Because if the additional impact unstuck the valve, then when I let the clutch back out, it would stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as soon as you let the clutch out, it starts clacking away again?
It starts again, yeah.
You're absolutely sure of that?
I am not absolutely sure of that.
Oh, Jim. I mean, the only thing that makes sense here is that you're wrong about the issue of when you step on the clutch and rev the engine, the noise goes away. And you just admitted, under oath, that you're not really sure that that's true. If, in fact, that's not true, then the stuck valve theory is perfect.
Okay.
Right.
Let's go with that.
Okay.
The question is now, what do you do about a stuck valve?
Yeah.
Well, you can try additives. There are various
additives
fuel system additives that will work.
Okay.
Give it a shot.
Give it a shot.
Okay.
And it was unfair of you to be so harsh on us.
Well, was I harsh?
Never mind.
Nah, you guys are God.
Hey, Jim.
See you, Jim.
Hey, thanks for calling, Jim.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That was a nice five-minute call.
Oh, I'm exhausted. Hey, look, before we get to the new puzzler, and I know you can't wait, we have to take a short break.
Well, great. You know, I really do need a break. This has been grueling. I mean, grueling, I tell you, grueling.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, the calls have been a little challenging this week.
Calls? We had calls? I was talking about the New York Times crossword puzzle.
Well, I'm glad you're giving us your full attention. Anyway, we'll be back with a new puzzler and, of course, more of your calls in just a minute. So please stay tuned.
Me and my buddies down at Buggy's Bar, pulled the engine out of my old car. Hadn't been run for a couple of years, so we had us some beers. Sound like a good idea. When we're all done, I hope she starts, 'cause we ended up with some extra parts. Pondered these over another beer, ended up here. I'm a two-step man, playing in a two-step band, living in a 12-step world. I'm looking for a two-step girl.
Support for Car Talk on NPR comes from our bocce ball hustling racket. From NPR, NPR member stations, and...
The Pajamagram Company, offering leopard hoodie footies and women's pajamas delivered overnight and on Valentine's Day at pajamagram.com. And...
The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
For 40 years working to improve health and health care.
On the web at rwjf.org. And...
Angie's List, with reviews on local contractors and doctors in 500 categories, with ratings based only on member feedback. Angie'sList.com.
And even though hibernating bears wake up, then take a double dose of Lunesta whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Collect, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler from the insect kingdom. We haven't delved into the wonderful world of...
No, we've had the String series of Puzzlers.
We've
had the Krusty series.
Oh, yes.
And this is from the Bug Collection.
In honor of Bugsy, who happens to be here today.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he heard there was a free lunch, and he got the aroma wafting out of the cafeteria. Okay, you ready? Now pay attention.
Okay, go ahead.
Two grasshoppers are hanging around one day, and each of them is boasting that he can jump faster than the other one.
Jump faster?
Yes, in other words, cover a greater distance in the same amount of time.
You mean farther?
No, faster. I mean, if you and I are racing...
Yeah,
I get to the finish line first. And admittedly, at that very instant, I will have run farther, but the objective is to see who can go faster.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so that's how they do it. They jump, and then they jump again, and they jump again. Each jump being like a step that we would take.
Or some, I don't know what grasshoppers
whatever they call them.
Anyway, to settle the argument, they decide to have what?
A race.
There you go.
I'm quick, huh? Yeah, okay.
The larger of the two grasshoppers, who can jump 10 inches at a bound...
Yeah.
His name is Throckmorton.
Throcky.
Okay, and the other one, who's named Rocky, can jump 6 inches at a shot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I get it now.
So the larger guy says, okay, here's what we're going to do. He says, we're going to set up a race that consists of 24 feet, 12 feet out and 12 feet back.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's going to start off at the starting point. Okay.
I gotcha.
Vinny's going to
shoot
the gun.
Yeah.
And we're going to take off, okay? Now, even though the bigger guy can jump 10 inches at a shot, the other guy jumps more often. So when they get to the 5-foot mark, which is 60 inches, the little guy will have jumped 10 times.
Right.
Right? The big guy will have jumped 6 times, but they're dead even.
Exactly.
Neck and
neck. Do they have necks?
Grasshopper. Antenna. They're antenna to antenna.
Gotcha.
You got it?
Okay.
So the bigger grasshopper who takes the bigger leaps has designed the course, and it's 12 feet out and it's 12 feet back.
Gotcha.
Can either one of them win the race?
And what, is there a part B?
How?
And it's part three?
What's
who?
Part?
Who?
Good question.
Right? So you do want to know who?
If you want.
Okay, gotcha.
If you choose.
All right.
If you think you know the answer. Write it on a postcard.
This is very good.
Or scratch it on the underside of a Zamboni Model 445 ice resurfacer. Hey, if you can't chip it away, might as well resurface it, right? With a 3-liter, 4-cylinder overhead valve, liquid-cooled engine, continuously variable hydrostatic axial piston transmission, structural steel tubing chassis, and hands-free operation system, and send it along. Ooh, hands-free, I like that. And send it along with 40 cases of Swiss Miss hot chocolate to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
But right now, if you have a car question for us, we're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Judy.
Where are you from, Judy?
Pocatello, Idaho.
Hi, Judy.
Hi. Yeah, what's up?
I have a 91 Accord station wagon, and around fall, the hatchback started falling down. Whenever I would open it, it wouldn't stay up.
Yeah.
And so my husband ordered replacement. I think those are called, they're struts or something.
Pistons.
They're air compressed or something. And he ordered replacements for us. And they were expensive, and we neglected to go pick them up and sort of just lived with the hatchback falling down. And
you get good at holding it up with your head.
That's right.
While you take the grocery bags out of the
back. Or the shoulder or whatever.
Yeah.
But sometime in the spring, suddenly, the hatchback started working again, and it would stay up just fine.
Yes.
And so all spring and summer, it worked fine, and we thought, well, it must have just been a fluke.
Yes. Until the cold weather came back.
Yes, and then October, it started happening again.
You started getting those lumps on your head.
Yes.
And you wonder why.
I do wonder why, and I wonder, even if we get these replacement parts, whether or not we'll still have the problem.
No, you won't.
Okay.
No, what's happened is the pistons that are in there have leaked out. What's in there is a gas under pressure.
Okay.
So when you open the trunk, the pistons hold the thing up because this gas under pressure is pushing the rods out.
All right.
And then in order to close it, you must overcome this and compress that gas.
Okay.
Which fortunately is compressible.
Yeah. But fortunately, the weight of the hatchback is not enough to compress it. If everything's working right.
All right.
But when some leaks out, the weight is enough and the thing will either close very quickly or usually close very slowly at first. When the warm weather came, the increased temperature increased the pressure.
Okay.
Because if we remember our high school chemistry.
I do.
You should never remember our high school chemistry. But as you increase the pressure, as you increase the temperature, the pressure goes up. So the thing worked all right in the spring and the summer and part of the fall. And then the cold weather came and you didn't have enough pressure. Now if you're parked
PV
in the sun.
PV equals NRT.
Something like that.
I don't remember that much.
I don't either. I made it up.
Okay, so if I do get the replacements, then it
they'll
should work.
They'll work, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Because they will not have leaked.
Well,
like
the boys at the grocery store are going to appreciate this.
Yeah.
See you, Judy.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hey, you know what time it is?
Time to change Bugsy's feed bag.
No. It's time to play Stump the Chumps. This is the part of the show where we dig up a caller from a previous show to see if they took our advice.
I don't like that dig up thing. I keep But if they did take our advice, we want to know when they'll be able to go back to work. So who's our lucky player this week?
It's Joan from Wilmette, Illinois. Remember Joan? See, it's not so easy. Joan called us because her Honda CRX was behaving very strangely.
It makes a noise like an amorous donkey, and I want to know if I can ignore it and continue to drive. I think I know what the problem is.
How do you know what an amorous donkey sounds like?
Well, have you guys ever stayed at kind of a rustic Mexican resort?
No.
Oh, you see, they use donkeys instead of, like, lawnmowers. And so you...
Wait a minute. How do they use these donkeys?
I'm confused, Neil. Can we start again?
No, first thing in the morning, you'll often wake up to donkeys being amorous.
And what do amorous donkeys sound like?
Okay, here they go.
And that's what your car is doing?
Yes.
And when does it do it?
Like I'm standing next to the car, for example, and I lean on the front driver's side, you know, like on the hood, and it'll go...
By the way, which of the donkeys is making most of the noise? Is it the male or the female? I'm just curious.
I've never really investigated
that. Well, if you knew, I wanted to know how you knew.
How did we get from Car Talk to Wild Kingdom? I don't understand.
Hey, we just answer the questions. We don't ask them. So what did we tell Joan?
We said... ball joint, and get it fixed right away because it's dangerous.
No, not as dangerous as an amorous donkey.
No, but it's close.
Well, let's see how we did. Joan, are you there?
I am.
Look, before you fill us in, we have not spoken since your last appearance on Car Talk, have we?
That's correct.
And the answer you're about to give us has not been influenced by our staff, the staff of NPR, or by the set of donkey husbandry videos that we sent you.
That's correct.
So, Joan, did you take it right in?
I did.
And what was it?
It was the ball joints.
Hey!
I was actually both the upper and the lower ball joints.
So you've had them fixed since we spoke.
I have, and there was a wonderful, unexpected benefit.
Really?
It had been so long since this problem had been building that when I got in the car and drove out of the parking lot, it was as if someone had installed power steering.
Yeah.
Oh, your ball joints were so frozen that you couldn't turn the wheel anymore.
And I had gotten so accustomed to it slowly that I didn't really realize it. And, boy, I'm enjoying driving the car now.
Well, you probably built up some serious arm muscles in the last few years.
But I'm worried about you because you shouldn't be driving around the way you are. You're waiting for something to break, and sometimes things break, and you're dead. I mean, you really ought a car that's this old. You should go to your mechanic and tell him you want him to check out the car as though you were buying it, It's a used car, and you want to buy it, and you want to know everything that's
wrong
with it.
And you want the whole truth, the whole ugly truth.
That's terrific advice. And, you know, it's something I hadn't thought about for a long time.
Well, you got to do it.
Get on it. And thanks for playing Stump the Jumps, Joan. And thanks also for, I mean, I've known this ball joint noise for years, but I never knew it was the same as Amorous Donkeys. Yeah. Could you do the, I mean, you did the noise so well. Could you do it?
It was brilliant.
Could you do it one more time for us?
I'll give it a try.
Go ahead.
Okay.
That's great.
That's beautiful. Thanks, Joe. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
If you hear someone you'd like us to bring back for Stump the Chumps, please email us your suggestion from cartalk.com.
Or call right now and stump us. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Seth calling from Springville, New York.
Hey, Seth, what's going on?
Oh, nothing much. I got a 1977 Ford LTD 2.
No kidding. Gee, I think I may have one. Oh, I had an LTD, one. A real one.
A real one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the LTD 2 was a littler car.
The problem isn't that it runs great, because it runs great.
Oh, good.
But I need to blow it up. I'm working on a film project, and a little short film, and the scene calls for the car to do a, quote, lawn job, and then the car is exploded in a sort of, you know, mushroom cloud explosion. And I'm wondering if you guys have any advice on steps I should take to you know, prevent it from exploding the house near where it's going to blow up, and also from having things leak all over the place.
Yeah, the legal department is online too. Yeah, they say, you tell this guy anything, you're fired.
We have a licensed pyrotechnic. I got a guy from the fire company.
Oh, there you go.
Well, that's good.
But they're just like pyromaniacs. They don't really know much about. Yeah.
So this thing's going to drive onto your lawn.
Well, not my lawn. I found somebody else's lawn.
Of course. Your father-in-law's lawn. Okay, so it's driving onto somebody else's lawn.
Right.
And it's going to get blown up.
That's right.
And you're going to really blow it up.
We're going to really blow it up.
I mean, Hollywood does this stuff all the time. So this is a movie.
Right, but I don't have a Hollywood budget, you know.
Ah. Oh, this is a home movie.
This is, you know, independent, low budget style.
Well, we got a couple of relatives in them.
Yeah, but they won't do it unless there are bodies in the car.
That's right. But I mean, the big question is, you know, I don't want it to blow up the house, and you know, I figured I'd take the gas tank and put a boat tank in it or something like that. And I'm just wondering if there's some way I should drain the gas lines, or, you know, I want to do whatever I can to minimize randomness, let's say.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, neither of us has ever even set off a cherry bomb.
What?
Oh, no, I
my brother maybe has.
Oh, there you go.
I have never set, all I've, the biggest explosion I've ever been involved in is a firecracker.
No, how about the time that carburetor blew up in your face and burned your eyebrows off? You forgot that?
Well, I didn't actually do that.
Right. It did it to me.
So any advice we give you is completely
useless.
Bogus.
Yeah, and it would be akin to the advice we gave to the fellow with the cattle trailer a few years ago.
Yeah.
And he wanted to know about how to operate the brakes. We knew nothing about that.
And
we gave him a 15-minute answer. And we've had you on the line now for about 10 minutes. But we don't know anything about what you're trying to do, except that it's likely to result in personal injury. And we happen to know, and property damage, and we happen to know some very good attorneys we can put you in touch with. Have you ever considered using a scale model and doing something, you know, a la King Kong? You know how they
yeah.
Right, so
there you go. You could save the car.
I don't know. I don't know if I could make it look good enough. You know, I'm not Lucas and Company, you know.
Well, you might not be able to.
But Seth, we don't have to give you some advice.
We have to go on record as saying we can't give you any advice. But we're dying to know what happens and if you'll be called Lefty after that.
And how far from here is Springfield, New York? We want to come and see you do it.
Springfield's about 8 hours away. Far end of the state, western New York.
Yeah, we're happy that we're that far away. Send us a videotape.
Well, we'll probably hear something, but we might not see it.
Good luck. And make sure if you do this that we're do it on a weekend when we're out of town.
You got it.
See you, Seth.
Take care.
Good luck.
That could have been dangerous if you had opened your big mouth.
it's still going to be dangerous, and I hope he gets professional help. Of all kinds. Well, it's happened again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Cavs of Belleville Green, Carly High Voltage Nix, and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenalosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Britchford. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our interns are Ariel Niedermeyer and Kara McKnight. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the West Chop, Gumdrop, Milk Sop, Pig Slop, Sweet Shop, Big Top, Lunch Swap, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Marge Navera. Our customer care representative is Hey, Would You Buzz Off. Our personal makeup artist is Buck Tugley. Our second shift meteorologist is Cloudy Overnight. Our windshield wiper replacement team is Ike and Zeke Learley. Our staff orthopedist is Denise Hoyt. Our creative director is Drew A. Blank. Our restroom attendants are Trudy Dorr and Donna Hall. Our warranty claim adjudicator is Nolan Voigt. Our chief accountant is Candace B. Rittenoff. The captain of our women's hockey team is Miss Inga Tooth. Our Ralph Cramden impersonator from the Dubai office is Mohammed Ahamed Ahamada. Our alignment expert is Lou Sagusi. Our Russian chauffeur is Peekoff and Dropoff. Our optometric firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. And the head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the pigeons with seasonal affective disorder in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And, don't drive like my brother.
Yeah, don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1206, download classic Car Talk episodes, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, find out about Car Talk's second opinion service.
Now, we know there are lots of people out there who just got a repair estimate for like $1 jillion and are wondering, do I really need this stuff?
So what do? They call us.
And what do? We put them on hold because we only got an hour a week to take calls. So we've put together a group of experienced mechanics to provide a much faster service for when you really need an instant second opinion on a repair estimate.
There's a small fee for it.
But hey, these guys have boat payments too, right? Get all the details on Car Talk's second opinion service right now over at cartalk.com.
Support for Car Talk on NPR comes from NPR member stations and
Esurance, an Allstate company offering tools to help guide customers through the car insurance process from quote to claim. Learn more at esurance.com. And
the Poetry Foundation,
celebrating 100 years of Poetry magazine.
Online at poetryfoundation.org.
And WeatherTech, maker of floor mats and floor liners to protect a vehicle's interior from snow, sand, mud, and dirt. Learn more at weathertech.com or 1-800-CAR-MATS. And
the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program, towing away your car and selling it to support your NPR station, with your permission, of course.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though NPR management forwards us Antarctic tractor repair job postings whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
Celebrating 50 years of community service and community support, this is 90.3 WPLN, Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML, Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS, Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 10 o'clock.